camera is filtered through the distorted lens of something that just happened to me 15 years ago. And it is something that just happened to me. I didn't do anything special or heroic. I'm not a hero or a celebrity anymore. Deceiving rascal or crackpot space cadet sort of person. I would like to be seen as myself.
Another episode of Alien Strand Podcast. I would like to thank everybody for listening to Alien Strand, going strong and stronger. If you can, catch me on Facebook at Alien Strand as well, Twitter and Tumblr. So throw me a shout out if you heard one of my episodes. And I'd like to enjoy seeing some comments on there. So today we're going to be talking about an alien abduction that happened to this gentleman. His name is Travis Walton. Through his abduction, he ended up writing a book about it. And the book was called Fire in the Sky. The reason he originally named it Fire in the Sky was because he was like, there were loggers out in Arizona. And when they were out there during storms or in the high mountaintops, that the every once in a while a lightning strike would hit one of the trees, and while they were out there, so they would put it out, and at night it looked like fire. So that's why he ended up calling the book Fire in the Sky originally. That was his original intention. So we're going to go ahead and get into the story. The incident happened on a Wednesday, November 5th, 1975. So we're talking some time back, okay? This happened in the Apache National Forest in Arizona. It's a pretty big forest. Apparently, he was working with a guy named Mike, and seven other guys were with him. Another guy was named Alan, which he did not get along with very well. The only reason he didn't get along with Alan was because a week prior to that, Alan was trying to get his girl. So they ended up having like a fist fight the day before this had happened. So anyway, Mike was his boss, and he had like a contract out there on the Apache National Forest. So he asked him, hey, can you go help me? We're going to clear out some logs. And the reason they did that was because some of the logs were higher than the others, and they had to chop down a few so that way the other trees behind it can grow higher and faster. So that was the whole contract behind that. So they ended up going up there to the forest early that morning. So they left about at maybe 6 o'clock in the morning to go out there and work. So they ended up working most of the day. So it was in the summer evening, usually at night out there in the mountains. You gotta remember, it's a lot colder in the mountains, and it was gonna be at about 10 degrees at night. So they were trying to hurry up and finish up for the afternoon. So they finished and put all the equipment away, got into their truck. It was a 1965 International. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but it's a pretty big truck, like a Suburban kind of looking thing. So they all jumped in the truck. It was starting to get dark already. And they headed out. They were pretty tired from the day, so they opened the windows. A couple of guys were smoking some cigarettes. You know, you had four guys in the back and three guys in the front seat. Mr. Travis Walton was in the back seat. So he was sitting by the window on the passenger side. So they ended up taking off. The sun was going down. They were all kind of enjoying the cool air that was coming through. And they went about maybe 5-10 miles down the road, and they're in the woods still. So they start seeing this light coming from some trees. And he said it was about 100 yards away to the right. And so they started getting closer and closer and closer to it. So it's already getting dark outside. And Alan, he said, you know, SOB, he said, what is that? And they kind of all stopped the truck and started looking towards that way. And they were just kind of freaking out on what it was. So they started moving towards down the road, and it was getting closer and closer to this white light that they were looking at from a distance. So another guy's name was, he was in there, his name was Mike. He said, man, that looks kind of like a downed airplane crash, the way it kind of looks, the way it was reflecting off the trees. So John, when they got real close to it, he said, hey, stop the truck. And then Alan yelled, he said, oh my God, it's a flying saucer. So they're looking at this thing like in a small clearing to the right of the truck when they stopped the truck. And they said it looked like a golden disc, and it was hovering about 20 feet above the ground. So they said it was illuminating a lot of light. Like he said it was like a metallic color. He said it was about 15 feet like above the logs. It was like some cut down trees that there was kind of hanging. It was there. So he said that that by the way it looked like it was about 20 feet wide and about 10 feet thick. I'm talking about the craft here. So at this time, Travis got out of the truck, and he said, man, I want to, and he was thinking in his mind, because I saw his interviews, that he wanted to go up to it because he didn't want it to fly away. He wanted to get a closer look at this thing, right? So Travis got real, real close to this thing, and he said he could see, like, all kinds of light illuminating from it, different colors. He can see that, like, the craft was like a metallic silvery disc. You know, he got that close to it. So he kind of crouched down. He said he crouched down, like, towards underneath the craft. And, like, he could see, like little markings and stuff on it. And then he said that all of a sudden he heard like a low humming pitch sound emitting from it, right? And then all of a sudden it turned to a high pitch. And then Mike screamed at him and said, hey, you need to get away from there. So at that moment, Travis turned around and he looked towards the guys. And right when he got up, that craft shot on like electric. He said it was a blue-green color. That's all he saw, like the color, and the beam hit him from behind. Travis said he knocked out at that point, but the witnesses, which was the other six guys that were in the truck, said that it lifted him up and it bent him backwards with his arms hanging back and stuff, and it ended up flinging him about 15-20 feet after he got hit by that beam. And they said he fell to the ground like a piece of meat. You know, it was just, they thought he was dead. So they took off. They all got scared and they took off. So they hauled butt down the road, you know, thinking, you know, what happened. And so at this time it's dark, and they could see like a light that they were looking for, like hunters down the road, just to see if they can flag somebody. And then all of a sudden, you know, Mike stops the truck, and he said, man, he goes, we need to go back and go get Mike. I mean, and go get Travis. So the other guys were saying, heck no, I ain't going back there. So they ended up all talking about it for just a few minutes. And so they decided to turn around. So they turned around and headed back another 5 miles back where it happened. So when they started getting towards the clearing, Mike said, When we took off, I turned around and I looked. When we first left him there, I turned around and looked to my right, and I saw the disc kind of go in a vertical shape, angle, and it just took off like with a high speed that I've never seen before. So he thought that they had left him there on the ground. So when they get back, where he got hit with that bolt, Travis got hit. They went back to find him, and they all got out of the truck, started looking around for him, and they couldn't find him anywhere. So they figured, you know, he was dead, or what? They don't even know what happened. So they, before this thing could come back, they were just kind of freaking out, scared. So they said, you know what? We need to go. So they took off. They took off, and they went back into town. I think as soon as they got to the main road, it was about maybe 6 or 7 miles. And one of the other guys says, we need to report this to the sheriff's office. And needless to say, they did that night. So when we come back to the actual abduction, this is Travis's, when he woke up, I'm going to tell you what he had said. So Travis ends up waking up like in a daze. Like he said, he couldn't see anything. All he knows that he was laying like on a bed. He thought it was a bed, so he figured he was in a hospital. He said, I saw these things walking around me, these shapes of people, because they looked like doctors to me, but his vision was so blurred from the... He said it was like an electrocution that he got hit with. So he still was weak. He was, you know, I don't know if you've ever been hit with electricity just from the wall. It hurts. So I'm sure his muscles had, you know, like spazzed out a little bit. So that way he was in a lot of pain, you know, trying to walk or get up or anything. So anyway, he's laying there, and he says, where am I? You know, where he was, it was hot. It was humid, like the air was thick. He couldn't even breathe barely. He said his vision was real blurred. He laid there for maybe a minute or so, and then his vision cleared up. So when his vision cleared up, he looked, and he ended up seeing, like, he was like in horror, because he was face to face with three alien grays that were standing there looking at him. So when they were, he was so scared, he started screaming. He said that they were wearing like orange and green, sort of like a little jumpsuits. He said their eyes were so big. He said they were like a cat's eye, and the eye would blink. He says, I've never seen anything like that. You usually see it like in a cat's maw, you know, a blink, a normal person's blink. He says, but the eye was so huge on both of their eyes, and it was blinking. And he says, that was just, I couldn't get that, how is this happening, or who are these people or things? It was just stuck on his mind. He was like freaked out. So he says that those things started coming towards him, and they had like instruments and tools. He said they were like silver chrome-like. And he was trying to, he was starting to fight at this time. So he said, he got up, and he said, get away from me, damn you. And he said that they kind of looked at him like they weren't scared. So they started, you know, they wanted to do like medical tests and stuff on him. So, he says he ended up grabbing one of the tools that was there on the table. He says it was like a, he says it felt like a sort of scalpelish looking thing, but it was all silver and chrome. He says, I grabbed it and I started swinging it at him. He goes, I was scared. So I was fighting. I wanted to get out of there. He goes, and I could barely breathe. So he starts fighting them. He gets off the table, and he says the inside where he was at was so humid that, you know, it was hard to see. And the table and all the, like the way it was built inside looked all exactly the same material. So that's when he knew, hey man, I'm inside of a spaceship. So he's freaking out. And he runs out. He's fighting these things. So he sees like a door opening, And while he's swinging this thing, he gets with all his strength. He tries to run, and he's falling. And he says, "I go through this doorway, and I start heading towards like a." He says, "Like it's like a hallway." He goes, "But I could barely run and walk because it was so steamy and humid in there." He said, "So as I was running through the trying to run, and I would look behind me to see if they were chasing me." And he said he saw them, but he was just trying to get away from them. He was scared. He was in fear. Mind you, he's inside this spaceship. So he said, I managed to look to the right, and there was like another door there. So when he went into this room, he said there was a chair sitting there, you know, like just a chair, kind of like we use for desks, in that kind of shape. So, and he sees like some kind of joystick thing on the chair. And, he says in this room, he could see all the stars, like all the stars illuminating out of this room, and like the moon and stuff. So what he did was he was so scared that he grabbed that handle. He didn't sit down in the chair. He just grabbed the handle and he moved it. When he did that, he said all the stars moved in a different direction and a different angle. He goes, but there was gravity inside of there. So they didn't flip or fall or anything like that. So he knew that he was in control of the ship that he was in. So he said, "No, I'm going to leave this alone because I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm going to crash. That's what he was thinking. So at this time, he gets up and he looks behind him. When he looks behind him, there's a man standing there. He said the man was wearing like a blue jumpsuit, and he had like a bubble, kind of like a glass helmet on his head. He couldn't see the face very well, but the guy had a helmet. He said this man was like 6'2", like a muscular build, like a big, I would say like sort of like a wrestler kind of build. And he said that the man grabbed him by the hand. He says he didn't force me. He just grabbed me by the hand, and I figured it was a human being that he was going to help me out of here. So, you know, he's freaking out. So this man grabs him, and he starts walking with him through that hallway. They go back out to that hallway and start walking out. And he kept on asking this man, "Where are we going? Are you going to get me out of here?" He said, and he wouldn't answer. So they kept walking through his corridor. The door opens, and they walk into this huge area. He says it looked like a garage. Not a garage, but it was big, a big area. And another door opens up from another ship. And the ramp comes down, and they start walking towards it. So when he turns around and looks back, he sees the ship that electrocuted him outside. And he noticed that was the ship he was in. So he thinks that he was like in a huge, huge ship, that when they abducted him, they took him into this huge ship. And he said, because when I was following this man, he walked me to another area inside of another ship. He goes, when I looked in there, he goes, there was about 3 or 4 other spacecrafts in there. They were about 45 or 50 feet in diameter, in width. So he says, and they all looked the same kind of craft. So the man takes him into this other craft. They're walking in there, and he says all of a sudden he sees 3 more of these men and 2 women. And they're all wearing the same jumpsuit, but they're not wearing the helmets. And he noticed that when he gets inside of the second ship where they're in, that the air was much cooler. There was no humidity. He could breathe better. So in other words, he was more coherent to what was going on. You got to remember, if you have a little bit of lack of oxygen or the humidity gets to you, you know, you're not going to be thinking very straight. But he says once he walked into that other second ship, that everything was cooler, he could breathe better. And he was talking to him. He goes, "Hey, where am I? what is this? And they wouldn't answer him. But he said that the women and the men, he says they almost looked alike. Or they had like this masculinity kind of look to their face. He goes, I mean, they weren't awful. You know, they were like good-looking people, but they were 6 foot, huge, big. You know, even the women, he says they were beautiful faces. He goes, but they were very muscular kind of looking. He says they grabbed him by the hand. You know, he didn't feel scared at that moment because he thought they were humans. So they sit him down on another table. So when they sit him down on this other table, he says it's like a silver table, kind of like what you'd see in a doctor's office. Just kind of imagine that. So he's sitting there, and they lay him down and make him feel comfortable. So when they do this, they grab, like, he said it looked like a little mask, like, you know, the kind for the oxygen mask that they put on your face to help you breathe in the hospitals. Well, he said it looked like this, but it had like a little breathing apparatus connected to it. He said it almost looked like that. So they put this on his face, and lo and behold, he passes out. So when he passed out, maybe a few moments later, he says, he goes, I woke up and I'm laying in the middle of a street. Like a county road in the back, in the woods. He says, and I'm looking up when I open my eyes, and I could see the bottom of the craft. He says it was about 4 feet above my face. So that's how close they were when they dropped him off. He was still wearing all his clothes. When he looked at it, he said he saw it. It was like over him for maybe about a minute or two, and then it started ascending up. He said, and then it took off with a high speed of, you know, and it looked almost like a star after it got up there. So he ended up getting up, dazed and confused. You know, he just gets up and he recognized the road what he was on. So he figured, he goes, man, I'm like 5 miles from town. So this is in the middle of the night when they drop him off. I'm talking 2-3 o'clock in the morning. So he ends up walking a good distance, 5 miles a good distance, especially at night, and it's cold. So he ends up walking to, I think he said it was a Shell gas station at first, back in the days where there was old Shell gas stations. And then he says that was, none of the phones were working. So he ends up going to like maybe another, I don't know, block away. He remembered there was an X on there. And they had 3 payphones. So he ends up trying the first one to the right. Of course, it doesn't work like usual. And then, so he goes to the second, which is the middle of the booth. He gets in the booth. He doesn't have no money. This is 1974. You got to remember, 75. So there's not. He picked up the phone, and you know, I don't know if you could still do that now and just call the operator, and it was almost like a collect call. So he remembered his brother-in-law's number. So he calls his brother-in-law. When his brother-in-law answered the phone, he said, hey, it's me. It's Travis. And he goes, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, Travis? He goes, yeah. He goes, man, I thought you were dead. He goes, no, I'm over here on this road, you know, 5 miles away. Can you come pick me up, please? And his brother-in-law said, yeah, we're on our way right now. So he took his sister with him and, you know, they and 2 friends. So he it takes him a little while to get there. So when they get there to him, he's standing at the phone booth and he's looking at them, and they're just, their mouths are like, their jaws are wide open. They go, man, we heard what happened to you and we thought you were dead. He goes, no. He goes, man. So he grabbed his chin and he noticed that, you know, he was stubbly, like he grew a beard. And he goes, man, how did I grow this so fast? He goes, I've only been, because, you know, Travis said, he figured he was only gone for about an hour or two. And he goes, man, how did I grow this within the hour or two? And they looked at him and said, no, Travis, you've been gone for 5 days. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, you've been gone for 5 days. So he ended up going back to the home. At this time, when this incident first occurred and the guys went to go talk to the sheriff, well, the local sheriff was investigating those whole 5 days that this incident occurred. The sheriff was pointing towards Alan. They thought Alan had killed Travis and left him out there somewhere. So they were doing like a murder investigation. They thought he was dead. And during these 5 days, you know, polygraph had just come in play, I think, for the local sheriff's office. So they give all the guys polygraph tests on what happened. And needless to say, they all passed the polygraph, except for Alan. And they said the reason for that was probably because he had some kind of beef with Travis. And that's why they were pointing towards Alan, thinking that he had murdered him and left him out there. So anyway, when he gets back, you know, when Travis gets back, talks to the sheriff, you know, the sheriff's kind of like telling him, you know, he goes, we need to find out what happened to you. And he tells him, you know, what happened to him. And, you know, the sheriff just didn't believe him. Nobody would. And they ended up doing polygraphs on Travis himself. And he told him exactly the story that I'm telling you right now. And he passed with flying colors. So they were just all scratching their heads, you know, couldn't figure out what was going on. But years later, like I'm talking maybe 15 years after the book, and then they did the movie in 1993, I believe. They did a movie called Fire in the Sky. Check it out, 1993. In the movie, it has a little bit more dramatic effects, and they took out a lot of the pieces out, so they wanted to make it more dramatic for the viewer. So if you've ever been to Roswell, New Mexico, and the Roswell Museum, the big one that they have there, go in there and check that out. I believe they're playing Fire in the Sky, that whole scene where he gets abducted. So if you ever go over there, they have a little theater in there. It's just maybe 15 minutes worth of the movie, and just check that out. That's part of from his book. So anyway, later, he ends up finding through asking people, and the sheriff was talking to people on the side, kind of off the record, telling people that, yeah, he did believe what Travis was witnessing, because a month or two prior to this abduction, they were finding animal mutilations out there. Cows, you know, horses. They had found a few out there, you know, how they have those laser cuts. Parts of the body missing from the animal. So they knew that something was going on out there. So when if you have a chance, rent that movie, check it out. It's called Fire in the Sky. Go to Travis's website. You'll see he's got a book. You can buy his book there. You can buy it off of Amazon, or you can just read what he wrote on the important parts of that story. And I wanted to get it out to everybody and people who haven't heard it before. If this is your first time, hey, there's a new story for you to tell or to see for yourself. And always keep an open mind about things that happen like this. You know, we all believe that there's something out there other than ourselves. And we just have to just keep searching and keep searching until we find the answer. And that's what he did. He searched and searched, and he had to go to counselors and everything like that just to try to find the answers. And then he ended up, because he had like a little bit of post-traumatic stress because of what happened to himself. So he had to go past that before he could write this book. So if you have a chance, pick up the book, read it, or watch the movie. Of course, the movie's going to be a lot different than the actual book. Thank you guys for sticking around today. And as always, check us out, Alien Strand, on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. Give me a shout out. And we're going to have some more episodes coming up here pretty soon. So I just want to thank everybody for listening, and spread the word. Spread the word. Alien Strand Podcast is here for you. So you guys have a good day. And you have a good evening. And you have yourselves a good night.